And with the last pick of the 2015 NFL podcast draft, it's the DenverBroncos.com podcast. Woo!
Mr. Irrelevant.
Mr. Irrelevant, yes. Thanks for joining us back on the podcast, aforementioned, last pick. We had the draft last weekend, as everyone knows. I'd like to start off real quick. We're thinking about changing the name of the podcast.
Let's hear it.
Well, before the draft, John Elway gave his pre-draft press conference, and it was Take Your Children to Work Day. And so a couple people in the press had had their kids there, and they were in the back of the room. And so I think Chris was putting the wireless mic on. No, I guess he didn't.
No, he was already up there. Yeah, He doesn't do that day.
Okay, well, he was waiting for it to get started, and he sees the kids, and he goes, "Hey, kids, welcome to Broncoland."
So welcome to Broncoland.
Yeah, I was thinking welcome to Broncoland.
Hi, kids. Welcome to Broncoland. I got some smart ones in the room.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I've been trying to kind of give this a brand because, I mean, no offense, but to myself, no offense to myself, but it's kind of a bland name, just Denver
Can
Broncos.
You offend yourself?
Yeah.
I guess. Okay.
I guess.
All right.
I can say I stink, and I'm like, that's not fair.
Oh.
Can you take that back?
Say I take it back.
So we'll consider that, and we'll see if we can bring that name aboard the podcast. I think that'd be kind of neat. Started off, we have that audio, so if we could get that,
yes,
I think that'd be pretty
cool. You need
cool.
To open.
Yeah, that would be the open.
That would be the open.
Yeah, right now we just have musical openings. You know, there's not much to it. Anyway, now we get back to the news, the NFL draft. I hope I didn't lose many people after that. Half our viewership was like, well, enough of this. You know, before the draft happened, people were kind of asking me, like, you know, Elway is known for his big splashes. Do you think there's going to be one this year? And I was like, I don't know. Anything happens in the draft. I mean, everyone, from all the mock drafts we kept track of, everyone had us taking an offensive lineman, except for Andrew Mason, who didn't get the pick right, but
no.
He was in the right direction.
Yes.
And anything did happen. He did make a splash. They traded up five spots to get to the Lions pick at 23, and they took a guy they had rated in the top 10 of their draft boards. That's Shane Ray, outside linebacker / defensive end. In the 3-4, he's going to be that outside rushing linebacker. And he kind of fell. Well, not kind of. He did fall. He tumbled a long way because he got a citation for marijuana leading up in the days before the draft. No arrest, just citation for it. And I guess enough teams decided they didn't want to take a risk. I don't know. Maybe this is kind of different because we live in Colorado and
no.
It's not that big a deal, I think. I think more it's just kind of a decision that was, you know, not something you want to do with the draft coming up. You would think that that's something you would avoid, but the Broncos got their guy. You know, they thought he wouldn't last to 28, so they made the trade and got a really talented player who will be behind DeMarcus Ware and Von Miller on the outside edge there.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, going into the draft, players do, or the teams do a lot of personal interviews with players, mm-hmm. and they get a sense to know what a player's character is like. And, you know, the Broncos felt comfortable enough with their interviews and time with Shane Ray to think that, you know, this wasn't going to be a problem with him. And they looked at what he was able to do on the field. He was the SEC Defensive Player of the Year last year. And they felt, like you mentioned, he was a top 10 kind of talent. And when he started falling, you know, the Broncos can look at how the board is positioned and say, okay, we can move up to 23 and get this guy and, you know, take the best player available. And they clearly did that when they picked up Shane Ray.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've heard the stories about Jameis Winston and I'm sure some other players who have had extensive background research done by teams. I think the Bucks said they called like 75 people. So it's like, I mean, it doesn't reach out to all players, but when there are questions, I'm sure it's not beyond the realm of possibility to give a call to someone close to them.
And after when Shane Ray was introduced, we had a chance to talk with his mom a little bit, and she said that this was the first time that he's ever gotten in trouble like this. And that's why it was so hard for her to comprehend why he would do something like this the week of the draft. But she said that he's a good kid, and, you know, he had a tough background, you know, growing up in a part of Kansas City called the Murder Factory, you know, but he went to a private high school. His mom helped put him through that, and, you know, he was able to make his way to Missouri, and he excelled there. And, you know, she said this was really the only time that he's ever gotten in trouble like this. So, you know, the Broncos felt comfortable enough with him, and John Elway and Gary Kubiak, you know, said, hey, let's do it. And so, you know, they made that splash, like you were saying.
One thing he was talking about at his press conference is what it was like when he had to tell his mom. And I think we've all had to approach our mothers or our fathers or our guardians and tell them something that we did.
Yes.
And kind of wary, and you're like, don't be mad. Yeah. There's always that preface. Don't be mad, but...
Say, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Oh, yeah.
That was the worst. That was the worst.
Did you ever have one of those?
You know, nothing like Shane Ray, but, you know, just like little things in high school, you know, goofing around with your friends and that kind of thing.
Yeah, grades. I think grades happened to me maybe a couple of times. Like in college. In college, I had a couple, like... pretty low grades. I had to drop a course.
Yeah, grades was always, yep. You always had to tell the mom and dad.
Yeah, my dad was usually a little bit, he was more one to let things slide once he heard how it happened, and he would lay it down. He would say, you know, well, this can't happen again.
Yeah, my mom was always the, when it was just a little thing, she would take care of it, but then it was a big thing, it was always, oh, wait till your dad gets home.
Papa Milani's
yeah,
coming.
And then that's how you knew. That's when you, uh-oh.
I really screwed up.
Exactly.
So it definitely seems like the Broncos are really confident in that this was just a one-time slip-up. They're very confident in his character. And I think it was kind of easy to see why. I mean, when you had him facing the music, he could have dropped out of coming to the draft. He could have dropped out of talking to media. And he didn't. He faced it. I think that was the best way to do it, is to own up to it. I mean, as far as slip-ups go, I mean, slip-up seems like we might be trying to let us off the hook a little bit easier. I think it was a poor decision. But as far as handling issues like that, handling when you are confronted by the police and face a citation, that's the way to do it as a public figure like that.
Yeah, he issued a public apology. He said that he was sorry to his mom. He was sorry to, you know, prospective NFL teams. And he kind of just he owned up to it. He said that he made a mistake. And, you know, hopefully he can learn from it. And one thing in the Denver Broncos locker room is he's going to be playing with a lot of veterans. You know, he's going to be playing with, like you said, DeMarcus Ware. He's going to be playing with Von Miller, a guy who's kind of gone through, you know, some things in his career, and he can kind of help teach Ray a little bit about what it's like to be a professional. And even on the other side of the ball, when you have Peyton Manning playing in his 18th season in the NFL, you know, when he's your teammate, you know, you kind of follow his lead a little bit. And, you know, I think that when Ray walks into the Broncos locker room, he's going to, you know, realize what it means to be a professional.
I think one thing, there are some Broncos who have had some, you know, issues in their past, and they've been really open about it. They've been open about talking to people about it, about, you know, why they, what they did was wrong, and how they did things to kind of correct that. And these are some guys that, you know, they might come by the facility. So I think having those presences from alumni, being able to kind of walk them through, like, you know, making them stay away from a bad path is going to be a little bit of help, too.
Yeah, the Broncos definitely have a family atmosphere, especially with alumni, like you said. So, you know, when you're part of that family, you know what the responsibility is and you know what your job is, you know, and that kind of helps you stay on the proper path.
Now, on the field, obviously he's not going to be starting DeMarcus Ware out and Von Miller out on the two edges there. But when you talk about rotations, he'll be in there a lot. DeMarcus, being at how many years that he's had on his tires there, You know, he could use the help as far as having a young guy who can come in that rotation. So maybe later on in the season, he has a lot more left in the tank.
Well, I think that, you know, when drafting a guy like Shane Ray, it does a lot of things for you. You're able to, like you said, kind of help get take some of those reps away from DeMarcus Ware so that, you know, come the end of the season or come playoff time, if the Broncos make the playoffs, that DeMarcus Ware will be fresh. The other thing, though, when your defensive coordinator is like Wade Phillips, a creative guy who likes to mix up his blitzes and that kind of thing. Imagine on the field, a DeMarcus Ware, Von Miller, and Shane Ray all coming after the quarterback. And we heard that, you know, John Elway say that Shane Ray plays like he has his hairs on fire. and then Gary Kubiak kind of followed that up and said, I know one thing, it's going to be fun getting after the quarterback. And that's certainly what the Broncos now have on their defensive front.
It's definitely an exciting time to kind of have another weapon for Wade Phillips. We were kind of floating that out there in the podcast. You know, it's always good to have a stacked defense, and that Broncos defense is definitely going to be back in line for another top five spot like they had last year.
Yeah, and Phillips, likes to play a little bit more aggressive than perhaps maybe Jack Del Rio liked to get with the defense. And you're getting an aggressive guy in Ray. And like you said, you can never really have too many guys who can get after the quarterback.
Right. In the second round, next day, the Broncos went with a player that I'm sure they've had many chances to watch, Ty Sambrylo.
Okay. Ty Sambrylo.
Right. We've heard some people erroneously mispronounce it, Sambrylo, but it's Sambrylo. As Phil knows, because he...
I asked him.
Yes.
I went straight to the horse's mouth, and he said Sambrylo. So there you go.
So that's all you need to know about him. All right, exactly. Next guy. No, Ty's an offensive lineman, versatile guy. He's played every position but center for Colorado State over his past 4 years with the Rams. Very experienced, very mobile, very athletic. He has a lot of lateral agility. And some of that kind of comes from his background in skiing, right?
Yeah, he was a high-level major competitive skier. You know, he skied with the USSA and won some events in the Far West. He grew up just south of the Bay Area in California. So not necessarily an area you would think is known for skiing, but 4 hours away, you know, of course, Lake Tahoe's right there and everything. And he grew up in a very athletic family. His dad was a pole vaulter for CU. His mom went to DU. Oh. His brother is a very good skier. He actually went to CU, but he didn't ski for the team there. But Sambrylo said that he actually skied more than he went to class. So and then there's a YouTube video where you can see his brother doing a backflip. So very competitive. And
apparently he can do a backflip.
He says he can still do a backflip.
Offensive lineman doing a backflip. That's kind of terrorizing.
His sister played volleyball at Oregon State. So he very athletic family. Football was not the only sport that Sambrylo can play. And he said, you know, just being able to ski at that level, he was able to see things and then let it react with his feet. And so, you know, if you take that kind of approach, you can think maybe how that could apply to a football player where he can see something on the field with his hands, with his eyes, I mean, and then react with the rest of his body. You know, I can see how that could translate a little.
And then in the third round, they went with another winter sports athlete, and that is Jeff Heuermann.
Yes.
Another pronunciation there.
That's correct. Heuermann.
Heuermann. Tight end out of Ohio State. Battled some ankle injuries, I think, for his final season at Ohio State. Clearly wasn't too big of an issue for the team as they went on to win the national championship.
Yeah, he played through that ankle injury in the national championship game. And, you know, he grew up playing hockey. So, you know, hey, a hockey player Physical. Can play through any kind of injury, right?
Yeah.
but, you know, he's a big guy, 6'5", 250 pounds. You know, he's a athletic tight end who can play both tight end positions and even can line up in the backfield as a fullback. So, you know, he's a versatile kind of tight end. Yeah,
Kubiak offense style tight end, it sounds like.
And when you're that big, you present a tremendous red zone target. You know,
how tall is he?
He's about 6'5".
6'5". Wow.
So he didn't catch a lot of touchdowns in college, but that's just the system he's playing in. You know, like you got to be careful when you look at college stats so much because if you play in like an Oregon type system, you know, you're going to catch a lot of passes. You're going to have a lot of numbers. But Ohio State definitely like to, ground and pound kind of offense, as we saw in their run to the national championship. The running backs there were pivotal in that run.
Goodness, they dominated that national championship game.
So we know that he can run block, which is also very important for a Kubiak-style offense.
For sure. Not only did he, when it comes to catching touchdowns, he also caught a huge fish.
That's true. He likes to hunt and fish. Yeah. There's that picture online. You can see him catching that huge one.
But 200 pounds, something other.
He said that he's very excited about being in Colorado, though, because he is such the outdoorsman.
Right. Moving along here through the draft, in the fourth round, at 34th in that round, 133rd overall, Broncos went to Florida and got Max Garcia. He played center for Florida, but, you know, he can kind of move to the inside guard spots, too, if he needed to, I would think.
Well, part of the Broncos moving up to select Shane Ray in the first round, they had to send Manny Ramirez to Detroit. Mm-hmm. Manny was such a good guy in the community, such a good teammate, and John Elway said that phone call telling him that he was going to be traded was one of the toughest phone calls he had to make. But with him now in Detroit, there is a bit of an opening on the Broncos' offensive line at the center position. Of course, the Broncos brought in Gino Gradkowski, guy who knows Kubiak's system, you know, and I would imagine that he would be kind of the guy to get the first chance at it. And then behind him, you have a second-year player, Matt Paradis, out of Boise State, who the Broncos say has a lot of potential, so he could get some action there. And then also, like you mentioned, Max Garcia, center coming out of Florida. He played in a lot of big games, you know, coming in the SEC there. He's a bigger guy, 6'4", 309 pounds. So, you'd like to see how he can do in terms of his athleticism playing in the zone blocking scheme. But I think he's a guy who has a tremendous upside.
He seems like a really fun guy to be around, too. I was looking through some of his old stories about him. And there was a game, I guess, from this past season where Florida beat Georgia on a last-second fake kick or fake punt or something like that. I think it must have been a kick because they were pretty close to the end zone, maybe about 30 yards out. And they had a walk-on who took the snap, just took it straight and ran for the touchdown like to win the game. And he was a walk-on, no scholarship, split his time practicing and doing everything with football and going to school, working at Publix at a grocery store.
Wow.
Doing the old bagging / cashiering. I'm pretty familiar with that, having done it myself. Called himself a bag shear. And after that game, I guess Max was one of the players who came up to the podium. And those two were very close, him and I can't remember this guy's – I think his last name is McNeely or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they had met at some kind of on-campus faith organization back when they both arrived at Florida. He became very close, and he kind of got emotional looking back on this kid's basically shining moment. He's now – that one guy is now going on to Florida's – I think it's Florida's – to their medical school, I think.
Cool little story.
Yeah. So he's got a little attachment to some guys there. So I just thought that was a pretty interesting story that he was – so I'm not sure what the word is.
Personable?
Yeah. Yeah, obviously, I think our own David Deschant, who we'll come back to a little bit later, said that his character on the field doesn't really match what is off the field because he's such an easygoing guy off the field. And
you got to be able to turn it on like a light switch.
And that's what he says.
Yep.
Moving on to the fifth round, Lorenzo Doss out of Tulane, cornerback. This is one of two Tulane cornerbacks that the Broncos drafted. We can go ahead and, I guess, do both of those here.
Mm-hmm.
Torian Nixon in the seventh round with the Broncos' seventh-round pick in the compensatories there. Doss, though, was probably their star cornerback. He started for most of his 4 years there. I think he only The only games he didn't start were three in his first year. So pretty big prospect they had there. He was converted from wide receiver. He has great hands. I was talking to the Green Waves co-defensive coordinator today on Monday, and he said that, you know, he can catch the ball from many different angles. Real easy, natural catching ability as a defensive back. And his best season probably came in 2013. He had seven interceptions. 2014, a little bit lower down. But he said that that he expects Doss to learn a lot from the Broncos' two cornerbacks in Aqib Talib and Chris Harris Jr.
Well, yeah, one thing that you heard about him is that he's kind of a ball-hawking type cornerback where he kind of baits the quarterback in into throwing it, and then he can go up and get a lot of those 50-50 balls. And like you mentioned, him entering into this secondary where there's three Pro Bowlers last year, you know, is tremendous for any kind of young cornerback. And learning from a guy like Chris Harris Jr., who was undrafted, and I imagine that Doss, maybe being a fifth-rounder, a later-round guy, might come into camp with a similar type of mentality. And then, of course, Aqib Talib there, another young player in Bradley Roby there, who can, maybe he can relate to him just being a younger guy in the league. So I think that Doss kind of finds himself in a pretty good situation.
Well, you talk about both these cornerbacks. They're going to have to make an impact on special teams. There's no way around it. And Chris Harris Jr. is obviously a guy who worked his way up from special teams. So a lot of learning opportunity there when it comes to the veteran talent in the secondary on the Broncos.
And then you mentioned Torian Nixon there. His biggest strength might be as a returner. You know, of course, he ran on the track team at Tulane. So, you know, to get on the field and to be able to get a uniform on game day as a rookie, you're going to have to be able to help out on special teams. And he could be that returner that the Broncos have kind of been looking for, at least they were looking for the most of last year before Omar Bolden kind of made a splash at the end of the season. But the Broncos definitely could use a guy who can put themselves in the Broncos in better field position at times.
And Nixon's backstory is kind of interesting. He went to Memphis for his first two seasons, was a starter there in those first two seasons. And I think he wanted to get a little bit closer to home and wanted to come back towards where he grew up. I think he grew up in Baton Rouge. So he wanted to be a little bit closer, so he transferred to Tulane, sat out a year. So he had to work his way back up into the lineup after missing a season. He had to sit out a season with the transfer rules. So junior year kind of came off in different packages, not as a starter. And then his senior year, he was back on the field as a starter. So kind of had to keep a mindset that, yeah, you have to, you know, just work your way back from the bottom of the totem pole up to the top. And he and Doss together continuing on to the NFL. Nixon did return some kicks for Tulane. It'd be interesting to see what if that can translate over to the NFL. I don't think he returned a whole lot, but college stats are so tough to find. I thought it, you know, even looking where I found those stats, it wasn't, I don't know. But yeah, his coach said that speed were his best skills there as a corner, is that he was so fast he could defend plenty of receivers.
I also heard that the two of them kind of were on the same track team. They ran the 4x100 together. So, you know, definitely
I'm sure they have some
the track field too. Yeah.
Great chemistry. You have to know exactly where they are. I used to run track, and I wasn't nearly as fast as they are. So there was a lot more time that you could kind of waiting for me. But
wait for the baton?
Yeah. Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I don't want to get too far off onto this tangent, but, you know, for when you're starting off in track and you're maybe doing passing off the baton, you can look back and kind of reach your hand back, and that kind of opens up your body, so you're not going to get off to a fast start.
Can't do that in college, right?
Exactly. In college, you have to kind of get down your three-point stance, reach your hand back, and just wait for it to hit your hand.
Yep.
You just kind of
you have that trust.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, moving onward and upward to the sixth round, we go to Maryland for Darius Kilgo, defensive tackle. I don't know much about Kilgo. I was watching a little bit of his tape with Chris Hall in there that Maryland was kind enough to send him. I mean, he looks like a strong, powerful dude. Looks like maybe a good fit in this 3-4 scheme. Don't have to be a huge guy in the 3-4 nose. You can go a little bit smaller, a little bit quicker. He looks like maybe a mix between those two. I saw him block a field goal kick, and he just spiked that thing back.
Well, this kind of was maybe an area of focus. Many mock drafters thought for the Broncos heading into the draft, especially with the departure of Terrence Knighton, mm-hmm. who was so good at clogging up the middle there. And then in the 3-4 defense, you know, you're kind of looking for a guy who can kind of contain the middle of the field and also maybe get some pressure up the middle on the quarterback. So you don't necessarily need that huge body, but Kilgo comes in 6'3", 319, so he does have that big frame.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll be able to see, you know, what kind of talent he is. Of course, the Broncos brought in Antonio Smith, who's very familiar with Gary Kubiak's system. They played together in Houston. Of course, Smith coming over from the Raiders. So, you know, we'll have to see what the Broncos like to do with that middle spot and maybe see if Wade Phillips gets a little bit creative along the defensive line.
Well, one of the things about the interior of the defensive line is that when you're going from a 4-3 to 3-4, the rotation that's going to be cut down is going to – there's going to be a little bit more difficult to get in that rotation as opposed to when you have twice as many guys.
And don't forget about Sylvester Williams, too, you know, who said that he's...
Sylvester or Marvin.
Exactly, and Marvin Austin. And there's just so many guys who have played in this league for a while now. And, you know, I know that Sylvester Williams said that he's poised to have a big third year of his mm-hmm. career.
He's looking as a turning point.
Exactly, like to show why he's the that first-round pick, he was worth that. And then, of course, the Broncos also have some of the more edge guys in Malik Jackson and Derek Wolfe. So there's a lot of playmakers along that defensive line. So we'll have to see if Kilgo can find a spot somewhere along there.
And then to the seventh round we go. Broncos had three picks here. We already covered the middle one of those. That was Torian Nixon. They all went back to back to back. It was a little
three in a row.
Yeah, made our lives a little bit interesting on the website.
They're on fire. Three in a row.
Was it three?
I think that if you hit one and then you hit two, you're heating up.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, that was a fun time for the website. We went a little while without a pick, and then all of a sudden it's just like boom, 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 and trying to rush to find these guys. Because, I mean, in the first round through the third and fourth, like everything's kind of created for these guys. They're expected to be drafted.
Guys you know.
Yeah, yeah. The profile is already built, and when you get into the seventh round, these are guys who they didn't have profiles built on NFL.com because I think some of them weren't at the combine.
Yep.
So it was just kind of like, all right, now we got to find out who this guy is. Luckily, the first guy who went off the board, Trevor Siemian out of Northwestern.
David Deschant
from Northwestern. David, who was with us last season, came back to help us out with the draft, and so he gave us the lowdown on Mr. Siemian, who I think he had some kind of injury, I believe, kind of hurt his statistics a little bit, which made some people question the decision. But there's still a lot of potential in him that I think John Elway and the Broncos staff saw, and that David saw too. He thinks he's a really athletic kind of player. You know, maybe not a player who dashes out of the pocket like Michael Vick or something like that, but a guy who can definitely make people miss. And I think they want to see what they might have there.
Well, heading into the draft, you know, a lot of guys thought that maybe the Broncos were going to take one of those top, you know, four or five kind of quarterback. And sometimes what you don't do in the draft says a lot. And, you know, after the draft was over, we heard from John Elway and Gary Kubiak, and both kind of reemphasized that they have faith in Brock Osweiler as the backup. So, you know, I think that kind of said a lot about where the Broncos' brain trust is in terms of how they feel about the quarterback position. And then if you look behind Osweiler, you got a guy like Zach Dyson, who's going to be heading into his third year, got a lot of time on the practice squad last year. And then, you know, I think that if Siemian wants to be on this team, he's going to have to try and beat out a guy like Dyson. And, you know, he's got decent, you know, pro size at 6'3", 220. And, of course, coming out of Northwestern, you got to be smart. So, So that's one of the plus sides there for Siemian.
Right. And when you talk about how the decisions you make or the decisions you don't make in the draft kind of speak volumes, they talked about inside linebacker I think a lot of people thought that they would take an inside linebacker at some point, including Andrew Mason, who thought they were going to go with Bernardrick McKinney. And they decided not to go with any. No inside backers. And when they asked about it, they said they were pretty confident that those injuries that Danny Trevathan suffered last year and the injury that Brandon Marshall suffered towards the end of last year, they're pretty confident those are going to heal up and they'll be okay. And then they also have Todd Davis behind him. I think they're pretty confident in Todd Davis.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're looking at a guy like Danny Trevathan who had 3 injuries to his knee last year, has a huge scar on the front of it, but he was back out on the field. We saw him last week at the voluntary veteran mini camp, and he was running around, and he says that he's 100% healthy. 2 years ago, he led the team in tackles, so you know that he can definitely make plays out there. And then Brandon Marshall, you know, I think that that foot injury was a little bit more serious than they originally thought, and so he was not able to participate last week. And he's going to be the guy who you're going to have to wait and see how he is coming around training camp time. But, of course, he led the team in tackles last season.
Right. Still a lot of talent they have there between the two of them. I can't remember if there was one more thing I wanted to say about Trevor Siemian, but I think we'll just move on.
Well, if you're talking about linebackers, maybe we can bring up the last pick of the draft for the Broncos, Josh Furman.
All right.
Box safety.
Box safety. That was the question from a lot of people before the press conference when Elway kind of, you know, gave his thoughts about it. Was Josh Furman was this guy who was listed as a safety, I think.
Yeah.
Listed as a safety for Oklahoma State and had more of the size for linebacker, I think, was the question there. So they had to ask Mr. Elway about what their thoughts on where he would fit on this roster would be as sort of like a TJ Ward type. And so, yes, box safety, being able to come into the box, help support the run while also maintaining some of the athleticism and speed that goes along with being a safety.
Yeah, definitely. I think he kind of fits the mold of TJ Ward, who kind of comes in and, you know, supports with the run and kind of lay that big hit. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see what a guy, you know, like in the 7th round, if he can kind of come in here and show coaches enough to, you know, make the team.
I never remember what I wanted to say about Trevor.
Oh, let's go back to it.
We were saying about how people were thinking the Broncos might draft a quarterback. I won some beer off of that bet.
Ah.
Yeah. I won with our own Chris Hall. He said first 3 rounds. I said,
no way.
I'm too stupid. And there were multiple people who thought we were going to go quarterback. Analysts, but not me. I was like, I'm not going to look at any speculation. I'm just going to go with my gut. And I'm now a 6-pack richer.
Ah, wise bet.
Yes, very wise. I'm a very wise person. Thank you.
That's why we listen to this podcast every week.
Right. Don't you?
Smart. I got to come here for the smartness.
There's some smart ones in the room. Then they wrapped up with some undrafted college free agents who were signed after it was all said and done. Everything was over. They signed 9 guys ranging from all over the country. I think there was a few offensive linemen. I think we might have had the linebacker in there. Let me take a look here.
The Broncos have such a tradition of signing a guy to the active roster from an undrafted player to the active roster. Looks like that might be tough to crack that active roster, though, this year. You're really going to have to turn some heads in training camp. Of course, we know C.J. Anderson and Chris Harris Jr., and the list goes on and on about guys who have made this team as a CFA. I think it's going to be pretty tough to do that this year.
Right, yeah. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it looks like the bulk of them are offensive linemen, a couple wide receivers, a nose tackle, and a linebacker from Nebraska, Zaire Anderson. So, yeah, there's going to be – you're going to have to definitely make an impact in these off-season practices and training camp going forward. I think it's 10 straight years.
Yeah, 10 or 11, something like that. I mean, last year we saw Juwan Thompson come in, and he made some he made a lot of plays in the preseason, mm-hmm. and he, you know, worked hard and made us, you know, made an impression for himself and made the team.
And had the longest rushing play of the year for the Broncos.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Oh?
Yeah, didn't know that.
You're so smart.
I think we talked about it last week is what I know it.
Ah, I see.
Real quick. What?
I was going to say, we always think about that C.J. Anderson play in Oakland, but that was actually a pass.
That was a pass, yeah. Real quick, I kind of want to talk about the live show y'all did. I thought that was pretty cool. I'd never been a part of anything like that. 2-day live show. How long did it go from? It was like 5:30 the first night going up to like 10?
5:30 to 10 or so. But what we thought was cool was that since we're right here in the building, we can kind of offer a unique perspective on, the draft. And, you know, Chris was able to talk with John Elway right as he left the war room. It was kind of a cool perspective there. And then, you know, we carried Shane Ray's video conference live. Then we carried the press conference live with John Elway and Gary Kubiak. And then we wrapped up the night here. So all from within the building. And it was pretty cool. We got a lot of, commentary about it, how a lot of fans really enjoyed it. So thank you guys for all watching.
Yeah, that was pretty popular from what we understand. I mean, that was such a cool thing. I think you were one of the mainstays on there. I don't know how many hours you kind of collected on live broadcast, but
I mean, the camera loves my face, so I really can't, I can't do anything about that. Just kidding.
The line of work picked you.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't have any say about anything. No, but it was good. We went off the air for a little bit. We continued to update the draft with lots of video and graphics.
Right, you had to kind of make an unexpected move when the trade happened.
Exactly, because you never know. We were standing by the whole time just in case, and then we also covered like the very beginning of the draft, all the AFC West, which the AFC West got a lot better in this draft. The Raiders, brought in a quality guy like Amari Cooper.
They had a pretty good draft.
Yeah, they had a great draft. The Chargers added an explosive guy like Melvin Gordon, and then the Chiefs also made some noise. So, AFC West had a very good draft. So we, on the live show, tried to update the rest of the AFC West as well.
Interesting.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Not that I'm not excited for sleep, but yeah.
It was a lot of fun. I think we're going to try and do a lot more live kind of programming like that. So, it's just that we're in the building, so, we can, do some unique things. So we're trying to bring that kind of a peek behind the curtain for some of the fans.
Exactly.
So
that's a unique opportunity that only we really have. So
exactly.
I think that'll pretty much wrap it up for this week's podcast. I'm not sure if we're going to have one next week. I'm going on vacation.
Ben deserves some vacation time, I suppose.
Just a little bit. I'm going to go to North Carolina to see some friends. And
wait, you're not going to do the podcast from there? I don't know about that.
You have to talk to John Elway. I actually scheduled John Elway for the podcast next week.
Oh.
And then I was like, sorry, I got to go on vacation.
That would have been a great interview.
Yeah, but, vacation comes first.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
No,
that's
don't.
Where your mentality is. Yeah, I understand. No, Ben has been working very hard. One of the last people to leave Dove Valley for the past several weeks.
Well, thanks.
Y'all getting ready for the draft, so.
I should sleep here.
As the players like to say, rise and grind.
Yes.
So what better way to do that than just wake up at work?
Cuts down on my sleep driving.
So yeah, exactly. Exactly. You could do more work that way. Way more productive.
That'll wrap it up. We'll see. Maybe Phil or Scott will have to run the podcast next week. I'm not
what
sure.
About Andrew Mason?
Well, Andrew can come on as well.
We can do something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see how it goes.
We all got to pick up the slack.
I don't know. We're gonna have a couple new additions to the team coming up for the department. We'll have a couple new correspondents. We'll say
some future.
Futures contracts we signed. So we'll have some new folks probably within hopefully a month. That'll be really cool to get some young folks on here. And
Fresh perspective.
Yes, fresh perspective coming into the DenverBroncos.com digital talent agency.
Wow.
Welcome to Broncos land.
Welcome to Broncos land. I want to see that.
I'll let y'all hear it right here.
Okay. Hi, kids. Welcome to Bronco Land. We got some smart ones in the room.